Hello, lovers.
My name's Alex.
And I'm Helena.
And you are listening to Generation Loveless,
a weekly podcast where we discuss the trials and tribulations of love in an internet-obsessed world.
We share our stories of bad Tinder dates, sexual awakenings, self-care, heartbreak and healing, and everything in between. So join us on this roller coaster of dating in the millennial age because it is one wild ride.
And we want to hear from you. Send us your stories, questions, and opinions. You can either send us a DM on Instagram at generation.loveless or shoot us an email at generationloveless@gmail.com. All right, let's dive into this week's episode.
Hello, lovers.
Hey, friends. I tried to think of something new.
I know.
You thought I was going to say bitches.
Yeah, I saw you make
that.
You
could see. But I don't want to offend people.
Yeah. Well, welcome back.
Welcome back. Okay, so in episode 4, we heard Alex share her experiences of dating while in recovery from addiction. Today, we want to continue that conversation about mental health, millennials, and dating, and honestly just continue to open up that dialogue.
Yeah.
This topic is near and dear to us. We both have a lot of practice utilizing mental health resources. We both are also currently seeing therapists and have seen therapists many times over the years. Also, shout out to our therapist.
We love you.
We do. And I'm going to grad school to become a therapist. Actually, I have a funny story about this. Last night, I was at a bar, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, what do you do for work? And I told him that I'm going to grad school to become a therapist. And he goes, oh, okay, so can you read me right now? And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, like, do you know what I'm thinking? And I was I'm not a psychic.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Okay.
Isn't that so dumb?
Yeah, it's annoying.
But anyways, we really do believe in therapy and counseling. And also, I think it's really important that we continue this conversation on mental health, especially in light of the recent suicides.
Right.
Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain.
I know, it's so sad.
So
and there's
tragic.
Just so many stigmas against mental health disorders and mental illness,
yeah.
And it's common. It's more common than we think, and we need to have more open dialogue about it so that people can feel comfortable asking for help or even just identifying that there's something going on. And
yeah.
It's not just them.
And you can seek help. It's okay to seek help.
Right. Yeah, and I think we should start off by discussing some important statistics about millennials and mental health. Data from the American Psychological Association and the government indicate that millennials report above average stress levels and indicate that they visit mental health therapists at a higher rate than previous generations.
That's interesting because I wonder, is this because there's less stigma? So we're not afraid to seek help, whereas before, because of the stigma, I know that when our parents were younger, it was a much more hush-hush kind of thing.
Yeah.
So is that why? Because we're more open about it?
I mean, in my opinion, I think it is because we are just more open about discussing these things.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
they didn't have things
bipolar
to stress about.
Mental illness or schizophrenia. You know, alcoholism,
yeah.
All those things have existed forever.
Eating disorders.
Forever.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember because I was there forever ago.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily think that our generation is more stressed than previous generations. Also, I will say,
no.
In light of these suicides that have happened the past week, I've seen statistics come out that since 1999, the suicide rate has jumped 25% in America. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's depressing.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll get to this at a later episode, but I wonder sometimes if social media, technology, being so connected in a internet world is just making us actually very less connected, quote unquote, to people
right.
In a vulnerable, meaningful way. And that's why we're becoming more unhappy. We're more easily addicted to things.
I think that that's what I was getting at. But yes, I think that that's very real. I saw a study that basically said, if someone takes a week off of Facebook, if a Facebook user decides to quit Facebook for a week, their stress levels have already been reduced significantly at the end of the week.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I know. I don't know. That definitely could be a part of it.
I think so. I mean, and I also want to mention just an example of past generations not talking about their issues. As a true Irish girl that you are.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom comes from an Irish Catholic family as well. And you know the stereotype that, you know, you always keep your mouth shut no matter what. And I remember my mom always telling me about all these stories. She was one out of 11 kids in her family, and they could never talk about their issues or whatever. And there was a lot of mental illness.
Well, my dad is an Irish, and it's funny because my dad has never talked about any of this ever.
Right.
He doesn't even, it's like there's a wall. He doesn't really even mention this kind of thing. So I haven't even had a conversation with him about the fact that they don't talk about it. He just doesn't talk about it.
Right.
Actually, I did mention to him the other day that rates of suicide for young men in Ireland are really high. And what did he say? He's like, oh yeah, because of the fucking gray skies and gray clouds. I was like, well, yeah, I'm sure that doesn't help. But anyways, let's move on to some more research. Matters of the Mind, a survey out of American University, found that while 70% of millennials reported they would feel comfortable seeing a mental health counselor, less than half would actually tell people if they had done so. So obviously there is still some serious stigma around mental health issues and seeking help and telling people, you know.
Right.
Which is interesting because we talk about it so openly. But even, again, going back to that story of the guy at the bar last night, he said, why do you want to do that? And I said, I want to be a therapist because it's helped me in my life so much and I've seen it help other people. And he goes, oh, you see a therapist? But you seem so confident. And I was like, I don't think that being confident and having mental health issues are mutually exclusive, first of all. And he was saying it in this sort of like, oh, you do that? Like he was perpetuating the stigma, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, honestly. Well, because the stigma still exists and we definitely want to end this, we're going to disclose some of our own mental health struggles to you guys. So I guess I'm going to start.
Yeah, go for it.
I first started seeing a therapist in 7th grade and not by my own will. If any of you listeners remember the teen angst movie 13.
Of course.
That was a semi-accurate picture of what my life looked like at the time. Not so much on the outside. For example, my parents both had jobs and we lived in a nice house and I grew up in a pretty privileged town and I was heavily involved in my local dance studio. However, something did switch in me that year. Even though I had yet to begin my spiral into addiction, all of the behaviors that came with it started then. I felt really depressed. I was anxious. I had this need for attention and self-destruction. So, the movie 13, which follows two teenagers chasing after boys and drugs and self-harm, well, that's what I craved. And anyways, my mom had a feeling where this was headed since she had seen addiction play out in her own life and her own family. So, she put my booty right into therapy. Unfortunately, I didn't get sober until I was 21. However, I have to say, being in and out of therapy during those adolescent years allowed me to practice awareness and mindfulness of my life in the best way that I could. And I think it helped me get sober so young. In recovery, with the guidance of my therapist, I've been able to understand myself and really heal the past. All this hard and sometimes very painful self-work has allowed me for immense growth in my life. There's a great amount of confidence and self-esteem that I've achieved through therapy. Don't you feel like that, Helena?
Oh my God, yeah, completely. I guess I'll talk about my situation a little bit, and the confidence thing comes into play once I get later in my story. I first started seeing a therapist as a teen due to really intense anxiety that I was having about school and the future and social situations. I think it was around the time that we were taking the SATs that I started having panic attacks. And the therapist that I saw in high school made me feel really uncomfortable, and she used to stare at me in silence. It's, I don't know if it's a Freudian technique, you know, psychoanalysis. Have you ever had a therapist like that?
Yep, I have.
Which made me have a really bad impression of therapy and therapists in general, because that was my first experience.
Yeah, it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, and I used to just blurt things out that weren't even necessarily true to what I was feeling because I was so uncomfortable with the silence and her staring at me. And I guess I wish I had known back then that it's okay to search around before you decide on a therapist that you really connect with. Instead of just, you know, going to the first person that your doctor refers you to, for example, you can find someone that you mesh with.
Right.
A few years later, after my first semester of college, I became really, really depressed. And it got so bad that I decided to take a leave of absence from school and come home and focus on my mental health. During this time, I was finally, after many, many years of struggling, diagnosed with an eating disorder, body dysmorphic disorder, and also clinical depression. And I guess these things, in my experience, all went hand in hand. Mm-hmm. They couldn't exist without the other, basically. After going through months of treatment and really rewiring some of my negative thought patterns, I genuinely felt like a totally new person. I felt incredible. I mean, I will say recovery from an eating disorder is an everyday battle still to this day, 4 years later. But I'm so much happier than I was back then. And kind of going back to the confidence thing, I think I used to feel confident by controlling my food, controlling my body. Mm-hmm. And that was this false sense of confidence.
Right.
But it was totally based on if I met the goal to lose a certain amount of weight or to be the certain body type.
Yeah.
Whereas therapy helped me to get confidence from within, just right. inherent confidence.
Yeah, of course. I can really relate to that. And also how exhausting that is. And so no wonder you become depressed from that.
And if you don't have a good body day, for example, or you're breaking out or your hair doesn't look the way you want to look. I mean, this is very specific to an eating disorder and like how you look. But you have no confidence that day. It's completely shattered because you're basing it on something superficial that's constantly changing.
Right.
So, yeah.
I have to mention this. Don't judge me.
Okay.
Aside from really changing my life, changing my brain as well, therapy is something I actually just genuinely enjoy so much in a slightly narcissistic way. But if you just think about it, I get to talk about myself and only myself for an entire hour with someone who is like a personal cheerleader.
Yeah.
And a non-biased opinion. And I can just say whatever I want. How great is that?
It is great because you may have people that you are able to connect with, but there's always bias. You know what I mean? Like if you tell me something about San Diego, for example, I'm never going to be like, no, Alex, you shouldn't move to San Diego because you right. should do whatever's right for you. I'm slightly always going to be like, no, you should because I'm going to be there.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was a bad example, but you get what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying.
I agree with what you're saying completely. I love just getting to talk about myself for an hour.
Yeah, and I want to ask you if you ever talk about dating, because I feel like that is maybe the main focus
subject.
Sometimes, depending on, you know, if I'm in a relationship or if I'm just, you know, in a weird, confusing, I don't know, dating situation.
Fling.
Yeah. I bring it up to my therapist.
Oh my God. Me too. And I think that going back to technology and how that's affecting our mental health, technology also in the realm of dating is a totally new landscape. We're the first generation to actually have it be so interwoven into our lives. And it's a huge part of dating.
Right.
So we're getting really confused over it and need guidance on it because no one has done it before us.
Yeah, exactly.
The
texting,
sense.
The sexting, the dating apps.
Yeah, exactly.
Communication has changed so much.
Yeah. And we're going to be talking in this episode about this Huffington Post article by Brittany Wong, where she interviewed mental health professionals. And basically, we're going to be focusing on these six issues that millennials bring up the most in therapy in regards to dating. And it's really interesting because I relate to, honestly, all of these.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah, and we hope by sharing this that we can remind our listeners that you are not alone in these feelings of whatever it may be.
Yeah.
In dating and how confusing it is and needing to talk to others about it.
And you should talk to others about it. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah.
The first issue that millennials bring up in therapy in regards to dating is there something better out there for me?
Yeah, we have all these dating apps. We have social media. It seems like there's endless options. It's like a paradox of choice.
Well, the thing with the paradox of choice is basically that even though we have more options and you think it's better to have more options, it actually cognitively confuses you and paralyzes you. It's harder to make a
decision.
If you have the choice between three flavors of jam, for example, and then you have the choice of 15 flavors, you probably think 15 flavors is a better choice, right? But actually, for your brain, it's much easier to choose from three because you end up feeling better in your choice. You're not regretting the fact.
Right. And that's the thing about some of us get FOMO once we start to feel like we are settling down or like
exactly.
we have chosen a partner, because then we start to think like, oh, wait, there are just so many options of partners out there. Did I pick the wrong one?
And because you can follow them all on social media or see them on dating apps or whatever it may be, you're constantly reminded of them.
Yeah.
So you ended up deciding to commit to one person. But then you can have constant updates on this guy that you used to be into.
Which is so weird.
But doesn't that fuck you up?
Yeah, of course it does. I think it fucks all of us up. It messes with our own instincts.
Yeah, exactly.
How naturally things are supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, so scary.
The second question that gets brought up the most is, what's the point of getting married?
Yep.
I mean, I've talked to my therapist about this. I've talked to all my friends and my therapist about this. It's
this specific question, what's the point of getting married?
Yeah, because the divorce rate is so high. I think I have a very real fear in that. And I mean, I know I'm not alone in this. I can say my 7 closest friends, there's only one of them whose parents are still together.
Wow, I guess I'm not included in the 7 closest friends. Am I?
Yeah.
I'm the one? No, I'm not. You didn't include me in that. Wow, dude, okay, start your own podcast. No, I'm kidding. Go on. It's funny.
I left you out.
Because these are your childhood friends.
Well, yes, but also, I just want to mention that this, the parents I know that are still together, it's the only marriage that I know of that they're actually happy. I know plenty of other people who stay in marriage, but their marriages don't seem very happy.
Yeah.
Okay, Helena. Well, if you look at the past 30 years, the divorce rate was obviously higher than we had ever seen before. So seeing what divorce does to families, especially when the two people in the marriage are not able to have a clean split, i.e. lots of fighting, court dates, lawyers, manipulation, it really traumatizes the kid's perspective of marriage. And I know that it's traumatized mine.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't firsthand experience that, but I did see a lot of people in my extended family, for example, and my friends experience that. And even secondhand, it traumatized me. Yeah. It just made me feel like you have to be so careful in choosing who you're going to settle down with. And then my expectations are really high, or I'm looking for something that's perfect and is not going to end in that. And then I don't end up choosing anyone because I'm afraid.
Yeah, I also see a lot of people in very unhappy and unfulfilling marriages.
Yeah,
so
that's
even though they're
reason.
Not divorced, I almost wish that they were divorced for their children's sake and probably their sake. I feel like they'd probably be happier people if they weren't together.
Yeah.
But
well, I think that the way that the thought doesn't come into my mind, oh, what's the point of getting married per se? But sometimes the thought has come into my mind in recent years, maybe I'm just going to be alone. Not necessarily, oh, what's the point? Because I would definitely still want to get married if I met someone. But part of me feels like it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, we'll get to that one later.
Okay.
Yeah, so the third one is, what does this text from my crush or significant other mean?
That's real.
Yeah, I have definitely spent hours analyzing texts with my friends, as you know.
Yeah, many screenshots and phone calls have been dedicated to trying to decode a text. I saw a funny, I think it was the Onion post, where it was saying, oh, fuck, I can't remember what it was, but it was touching on this point of, especially with girls, how we'll type out a message. It's a group effort to send a message to a guy.
Yeah.
And then we draft it in our notes, and then we go back and revise it.
I'm so guilty. I love going through my notes because I can see all the different things.
Me too. I have notes from 2014. I don't even know who I'm about, who they're to, like what these text drafts are to. But it's like, hi, I just wanted to ask you on what terms we're on and if you really see a future. Just like random shit like
that. Yeah, or I do the breakups.
Oh, she's cold. But if you listen to our episode, New Rules, you'll know that Alex and I now, after many years of doing this wrong, believe that it is really a waste of your precious time to sit around and analyze a text. Communication should be clear and easy. And you also should feel comfortable to ask for clarification. That's something that I was scared to do in the past, I think because I was afraid of the answer I might receive. Do you know what I mean? People leave things ambiguous because they want to be able to run away and not have ever really committed or... Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You've seen me in the situation with someone who I've been with you and I've been saying to you, Helena, I wish they would just text me saying they're not interested because this roundabout way...
Where it's ambiguous.
Just let me know.
Yeah.
I just want to know. I don't really care.
And you should be able... And you did ask for clarification.
I did.
Because you did sort of receive a little bit of rejection. And I think that's what people are afraid of.
Yeah,
but
totally.
It is better to know than to sit around and fucking waste your time.
Right. Thinking about it, moving on.
Yeah. And if they're being ambiguous, that's probably a bad sign, honestly.
Yeah. All right. So why don't we move on to number 4?
Why am I single?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely pondered this question, as I know you have. I think we both talk about it, and we also like to convince each other that, no, it's going to be okay. You're not going to be single forever. We're good about doing that for each other. But, you know, it is really hard. It's just, it's interesting too. I feel like it's not so much for me, at least, that I'm bringing in to my therapist, for example, that, you know, I'm asking her, why am I single? But am I going to meet someone who is really great and compatible and worthy of my time? Am I going to meet my equal? Because I feel like I haven't yet.
I feel like what I do is I meet someone or I build someone up and I think they're really great. And then I see one red flag and then I am shattered again and become really cynical and start thinking I'm not going to meet someone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of
course. Don't you do that too, kind of?
Yeah, we both do. And luckily we you know, tell each other that it's going to be okay and keep in the stupid effing dating game that we're in sometimes.
Yeah.
Or just to have trust, you know?
Well, as we brought up in about Meg J's TED Talk, so we talk about this in our episode New Rules, which if you haven't listened to, do yourself a favor and go listen. But in this TED Talk, she talks about how 30 is not the new 20, as some people think it is. And I agree with her, but because it is just a fact that people are settling down later than previous generations, it still stings or makes me question myself when I see friends my age that are getting married or in these long-term relationships and finding partners that are really fulfilling.
Yeah.
And I, on the other hand, feel like that's so far off in my future. I don't see that happening anytime soon.
I know. I mean, I have to say, I used to feel like that, and very strongly so. That being said, I have found new faith in love after watching a couple of my close friends find really incredible relationships over the past few years. And what they both have in common, actually, is that my friends were not looking for it at the time. They weren't actively dating necessarily. They weren't on dating apps. It's kind of like love found them. And I know that's kind of cheesy, but, you know, it does give me hope that it really is okay that I haven't stumbled upon that type of relationship yet.
You know what's interesting? Where I'm at right now in this very moment with this question is I don't really care so much.
Same.
Because especially like Alex and I and some of our friends are moving to San Diego and it's become this big thing. Alex has connected with a girl who is in my cohort and counseling program that I'm going into, and they are looking to live together and they have another girl living with them. I'm excited to meet my roommate. I have another friend moving to San Diego, and I'm just so excited for us and my friendships and everything that our new move has to bring to us.
Yeah,
and
career stuff. We're both heading in a new direction. It's not a need.
It's not a thing for me right now.
Yeah, necessity.
I haven't even really thought about it. So that's actually a good feeling to have, because in the past couple of years, I've just been like, what the fuck?
Yeah, true. Well, the next one is number 5. I don't want to be financially tied down to my partner.
Yeah.
And I get that. We've also talked about this a lot as far as if you were getting married to someone, would you want a prenup?
Mm,
or
right.
if someone asked you for a prenup,
How would you
react?
And I don't honestly know. And
it's confusing.
I think my opinion about this has been very strong from a young age because my family has a business together and their finances are completely intertwined. And because their business is together, it's not like there would even be a clean way for them to divorce if they wanted to. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because they fucking work together 24/7. And I always, from a young age, had a very strong opinion that that was not a good way to be.
Right.
Because the business talk, the money talk never stops in my house. Never. It's on 24/7. And it's stressful.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And I think that I would want to be able to get a divorce if that was how I felt and not worry about money.
Right. I completely agree. And I just think that I feel like if I was in the situation where I was making more money than my partner, I just feel like money to me, I'm usually a very giving person, and yeah, I think we would just make it work and it wouldn't have to be this very, you know, legal prenup situation.
Yeah. I don't know. Honestly.
I guess we'll find out.
I need to actually think about that in more depth, I guess. All right, the last one is, and this is specifically a female millennials talking about their male partners, or at least that's what this article said, and that is that my partner needs to grow up.
Yeah.
You've heard me say that, especially with my ex.
Yeah, I mean, I also think your ex needs to grow up
big
time.
Grow the fuck up.
Yeah, and I mean, there is some evidence to say that a male's longer. Brain actually takes longer to develop.
Yeah.
Versus a female.
I was telling my mom this, and she was saying that she doesn't think my dad matured until his 30s. she was like, nice. he wasn't really acting like more than a teenager until we were in our 30s. And I was like, oh, when we were all children.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I think what I notice with a lot of guys that I know is that they're still going out in these big groups of guys drinking all the time, like hanging with the bros. And I kind of thought that as we got into our mid-20s, that would change a little bit. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, do you see this trend too? Or is that just guys I know?
Yes and no. Like, I think it might just be especially the particular ex that you were tied to.
No, not just him. Guys from my high school.
I don't know.
We have different group social groups.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I don't know. But it definitely, I definitely say that. Even a guy, I'm not going to mention who it was, but a guy that I was talking to recently, we both think that he needs to grow up too. Yeah.
Yeah.
She just mouthed it to me.
I did. Anyways, if you're having these questions, just know that you are in good company. And if you're struggling with your mental health, there is help and there is hope. If you have the resources available to you, then therapy is an incredible option. But if you don't, confiding in a close friend can also be really beneficial.
Yeah, if you're currently experiencing a mental health crisis or you need someone to talk to, you can always connect to a free crisis counselor by texting CONNECT in all capitals to 741-741. And we just wanted to give you that resource in case you need it. And also, that's just for our United States listeners.
Yes.
Because I know we have some international peeps.
Well, thanks for listening,
yeah,
y'all.
And I can't answer any of your questions, millennials, about dating because I have them too.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'll let you know if I figure it out.
And we're in it together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Love you. Talk to you later.
Bye.